Welcome to Fitness Disrupted, a production of iHeartRadio. I am Tom Holland, and this is Fitness Disrupted. Let's talk about squats. Are squats really bad for you? Do you know squat? Are you a squatter? Let me start by telling a quick story. Many years ago, I was giving a lecture at the Marine Corps Marathon Expo before the race, and it was strength training for runners, one of my many favorite topics to lecture about. One of the reasons I talk about being injury-free, I would argue, is the strength training, along with other things as well. But great topic, loved speaking about it, and had the whole PowerPoint presentation. And I was with a bunch of doctors. It was actually, there was just a bunch of doctors who were presenting as well. I'm not a doctor, exercise physiologist. But when I came off after giving my lecture, a doctor whom I knew of actually practiced close to where I lived at the time, had been doing so for decades. He was right at the end of his career. I think he retired just a couple years later, and a well-known doctor. But he came up to me and said, "Tom, that was a great lecture." And I said, "Thank you." And he said, "But you know what? You're wrong. You shouldn't do squats. Squats are bad for you." And you know, I said, "Okay, we will agree to disagree." But that's what today's show is about. And what's going to surprise you, of the four or so studies I'm going to go into, they will contradict one another. This is the perfect topic for the show. This is why there is Fitness Disrupted. It's to look at the science, look at the myths, and make sense of it. Because there's both sides. There's both sides. And then, as I frequently discuss, it's the Venn diagram. It's the three intersecting circles, right? We're going to take the research. We're going to take the anecdotal. And we're going to take the common sense. And we're going to take where it connects. And we're going to go, okay, I see what science says. I see what experience with clients and myself has taught me. And then we're going to go risk, reward, common sense. Pretty smart way to approach it. Unfortunately, many people do not. And totally disagree with that doctor. Great guy. Helped a lot of people in other ways. Exercise science, I would argue, not his forte. All right. Quick break. When we come back, are squats bad for you? And we're going to talk about two specific things. We're going to talk about squats, and then we're going to take it one step further and talk about full squats. Should you go halfway? Should you go all the way down? So great discussion all about squats when we come back. We'll be right back. It's interesting how moments like that, being approached by a doctor like that, especially this was a few years back. So I was at the beginning of my career of lecturing. And, you know, that could be a little daunting when a well-known doctor who has just presented on a sports medicine topic comes up and says, "You're wrong." Again, I disagree wholeheartedly, and we will discuss why. And here's one quick way to look at it. Okay, how many people have bad knees, quote-unquote bad knees, right? How many people at cocktail parties come up to me and say, "Tom, I'd love to run, but I can't because I have bad knees." Now, the bad knees aren't, for the vast majority of people, I would say over 90%, whom I have this discussion with, it's not from running, and it's not from doing squats at the gym. So the myth about running being bad for your knees, if you believe that, you got to listen to the show I did with the guy, Dr. Daniel Lieberman. Okay, debunked beyond belief by science over and over. Runners have a lower incidence of osteoarthritis than do non-runners. Okay, and squatting. Those people are not complaining about bad knees that they have developed over years of squatting. Okay, so that doctor who was at this running, you know, expo, but telling people not to not to squat. And let me just start by saying, whenever the discussion about squats comes up, I say, you are squatting all day long. To get up, to garden, to pick things up, to pick up your children, to pick something up off the floor, to get up and out of a chair, the couch, all day long you're squatting. So for anyone in the profession to tell you you shouldn't do it, that doesn't make sense. Just at the outset, it doesn't make sense to me. It never has. It never has. And one line I like to use when it comes to squats, and this takes me back to another moment, when a great moment for me, I was auditioning. Some of you who are listening have done my Supreme 90-day DVD program. I was hired to host that. They were doing they auditioned a lot of people. It is a hard thing to host a DVD series like that. So they're looking for a very, as I say, specific set of skills, like Liam Neeson. It takes a lot. And I went into the audition, and it was highly stressful, but I knew I was going to get it. Anyway, they said, okay, demonstrate an exercise and cue us and just go, basically. And I said, okay, let's talk about squats. Here's how you're going to do a squat. And I said, squats aren't bad for you. Bad squats are bad for you. And the guy, Cal Pozo, well-known director of many fitness videos and just someone who was in the industry for a really long time, super highly regarded and scary, he said, we're done. You got it. I'll never forget that. So after that line, just delivering it and giving the proper form and all that kind of stuff. And that's my philosophy. Squats aren't bad for you. Improper form. And, as I will talk about, doing too much too soon. A common topic of this show. You have to walk before you run. You have to build a base of strength before you go and lift heavier amounts of weight. And before you do more advanced exercises. Those two things that I just outlined are rarely done in fitness. And that's how you get hurt. It's not the exercise itself that is the problem. It's your approach to the exercise or the person who is teaching it to you. Okay? You need to do it progressively and with the right form. Okay? So let's just get real quickly the overview of a squat. Why do we care, right? Squats are done and have been done forever and are a staple of most, you know, fitness professionals' repertoire because of several things. The body weight exercise, something you can do anywhere, anytime, and it can be modified for the beginner all the way up to the advanced athlete. Okay. And it is also a multi-joint movement involving large muscle groups, what's known as a compound exercise. So you get a huge bang for your buck. You are working a handful of muscles, a handful. You know, you're basically working your entire lower body and your core, your lower back, and depending on the type of squat you do and how you do it, the muscle recruitment changes as well. But you've got your quads, which are your thighs. You've got your hamstrings, the back of your thighs. You've got your glutes, your butt, okay, your calves, and again, your core and especially lower back. So you are getting a lot. And when time is of the essence and you want to get the most out of your workout, you try to put in as many exercises as you can that are compound exercises. You work many muscle groups. You build a lot of muscle if you do it correctly, and that's your goal. And you're working three different joints. You're working your ankles, your knees, and your hips. So this goes to what is thrown around as a functional exercise. Now, over the years, I've come to kind of parse and pull that term apart. I believe all strength is functional, but back to what I started by saying, we are squatting all day long. So for a doctor to tell you you shouldn't get strong at squats, that's a problem to me. For that reason, again, that so many muscle groups are involved, three different joints are involved, so we should be strengthening that. And the less you use muscles, especially your lower back and the muscles around your knee, your knees, the more pain you're going to experience when they get weaker and weaker and weaker. And that is the snowball effect that so many of you have and are experiencing. You have pain, you do less, your pain increases because the muscles get weaker and weaker. The contact, the rubbing, the misalignment, the imbalances and weaknesses get worse and worse. And that's why the pain increases. Okay? We need our knees, we need our joints to be as strong as possible. So, why are people saying you shouldn't do squats? Okay, I'm going to give you the scientific reading of it, okay? Here's what the researchers and exercise scientists say. The concern for harmful forces at your knee centers on what is known as peak patellofemoral joint reaction force, okay? You read the studies, that's PPFJRF, peak patellofemoral joint reaction forces, okay? Just forces at your knee as you're squatting down, right? And that may lead to patellofemoral pain syndrome by overloading your cartilage, which potentially leads to cartilage degeneration. We don't want that. It happens over time, but we don't want to increase that. And subsequent subchondral bone degeneration, okay? So we don't want the rubbing and we don't want the cartilage to degenerate. So the question is, does that happen? Does that happen? And when does it happen? And how does it happen? Okay. And patellofemoral pain syndrome, you go, what is that? Well, it's one of the most common disorders of the knees. Okay. Accounting for roughly a third of all knee injuries that are treated by doctors in sports medicine facilities, rehab places. And it affects not just, you know, the performers, the athletes, but quote unquote regular people as well. Knee pain, bad knees. Okay, patellofemoral pain syndrome. So my experience has been, as I just said, the less we squat, the less we lunge, another show, the more pain we experience. Now, it's going to go to how I will finish the show, talking about the progression and the exercises and how and when you should load your squats, but we need to squat. We are doing it all day long. And it is super important. And it is part of my success personally and with my clients. When you read, if you read my book, The Micro Workout Plan, and the clients in the book that I profile to give you the success stories, because that's where true, you know, inspiration and value comes from. These older people who had issues. One in particular who we went through every single running related issue and we strengthened. He was 50 plus. We strengthened through squats and lunges and step ups. And not only did he go from not being able to run for a couple minutes, he became a Boston Marathon qualifier, running a 3:40 something at like age late 50s, early 60s, crazy. And that can be you. You don't have to run that fast. You don't have to run at all. My goal for you is to be pain free. Pain-free. And if you can't squat and if you can't run, I always say that is like the worst thing to me that a doctor can say. Well, don't run and don't squat. Well, shouldn't we be figuring out why you can't? And shouldn't we be trying to figure out how to fix it? I'm not saying just don't do it. It's not just going to go away. It's actually going to get worse. So we need to squat. So all those muscles involved, such a great exercise, glutes especially. We are sitting all day long. And so many of the problems that come up, and this goes for hips and knees and lower back, are because we have weak glutes. And squatting is one of the simplest and most effective ways to combat this sitting, this inactivity. We need to do our cardio and we need to do our strength. And for me, when I get that, you know, I've been contributing to the media for decades. And sometimes I feel like a broken record, but it's because exercise science for me is and always will be the same thing. And when they ask for the best, quote unquote, best exercises for your lower body, it's always going to include squats and lunges. And there are an infinite number of ways to change those around for each specific person and each fitness level and your goals. Okay, but that's the question. So the studies we're going to look at are the forces at the knees. And it not only goes for squats, but we're going to more specifically look at going past parallel. So what that means is, do you go where your butt basically drops all the way down and a full squat is, you know, you're touching your calves. Your the backs of your legs and your calves, they are touching. I'm going to do one right now. And you've seen people in the gym. You've seen people in the gym do that. So the question is, do you do, basically, do you stop at just above parallel? Do you stop at 90 degrees of knee bend, essentially? Or like some people do you go full squat? And here's where the confusion lies, and I get it. American College of Sports Medicine, if you look at all the different certifying bodies, what do we talk about? What do they talk about? You should do exercises through a full range of motion. And I was at the gym this morning, and I watched several people do really improper form, and one of them was they weren't using a full range of motion. Person was doing cable rows, way too heavy, and very limited range of motion. And here's one other aside to doing strength moves with full range of motion. That helps with flexibility, people. When you do strength training through a full range of motion, it increases and helps with flexibility. And there are so many people who do limited range of motion, and that's not good. So this is one exercise where we may be saying, and again, we're going to look at the science shortly, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe this is an exercise where you don't want to go through a full range of motion, especially, and here's the caveat, with heavy weight. And especially when you're a beginner. And those two things come into play. All right, so what we're talking about is, especially in the rehabilitation setting, squats are generally done and executed to a shallow depth. And they're doing this to try to avoid the higher joint forces that's associated with the increased knee flexion. And that is the patellofemoral pain it's just talking about. And so let's look at the studies. Is that true? All right. You know what? Final break. And then when we come back, we're going to look at studies that say, yes, you should go past parallel. No, you shouldn't. And then we're going to bring it all together and say, here's the solution. All right. Final break. We'll be right back. You know how you know your job is exactly what you should be doing? I get so excited to do these shows. I really do. Because I'm going to give you these four studies, two for going past parallel and two against. And so this is why this is so necessary, a show like this, because there's so much confusion and there's both sides. And based on your bias, you can pick your side. If you're someone who does certain workouts with certain groups that love to go, you know, heavy and past parallel, then you're going to grab that research and talk about that. And actually, that's how I'm going to end the show. And this will be a little powerful, at least it is for me. And then if you're someone who doesn't believe that you should go past parallel and you don't want to go super heavy, well, then you can grab onto those studies. My goal with every single show and all the research is to take those and then take common sense and say, what are your goals and what's your risk reward? And that's where you go to. But what is my job? And what was my job as a personal trainer? To get you the greatest results in the shortest amount of time with the least likelihood of injury. The least likelihood of injury. And therein lies the rub, people. Therein lies the rub. And doing things and doing exercises incorrectly with improper form and excessive amounts of weight, you don't get hurt right away, generally speaking. And you generally don't get hurt in a month or 2 months. It's progressive and it's chronic. And then it's over to a certain degree. You don't want to experience many of the issues that occur because you take that risk. So we'll talk about that. All right. So let's get right to it. Here's the confusion. Here are the studies. Okay. All right. So the study was in the Journal of Orthopedics and Sports Physical Therapy, 2002, a little while back, but still a good one. And the title, Patellofemoral Joint Kinetics While Squatting With and Without an External Load. Okay. And this one says, basically, the takeaway is, yes, going past parallel can be an issue. And they say previous biomechanical analyses have indicated that the increased, let's call it, and to make it easier for you, it's the PPFJRF, okay? It's that's the forces at the knee is coupled with increased knee flexion angles, okay? In squats, up to 90 degrees of knee flexion without an external load and with a load of 35% of the subject's body weight, PPFJRF, again, that's the joint reaction forces, was found to increase linearly with peak external knee flexion moments in untrained men. Untrained men, that's important. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. So this is saying, yes, that as the knee flexion angles increase, the forces on the knees increase. All right? And the objective of this study was to quantify that, the patellofemoral joint reaction forces and stress while squatting with and without an external load. 15 subjects. And again, the conclusion was that yes, it increases as the joint stress increases, as the knee flexion angle increases, and that the addition of external resistance further increases the patellofemoral joint stress. Okay, and that's what the people against squatting at all, that's what the doctor was saying, is that you shouldn't do it. Now, he didn't even ask about healthy knees. So what they're just saying here is, yes, the stress increases. Is that a problem, though? Is that a problem? Okay, and here's a study that totally contradicts it. Much smaller study, and let me give you the takeaway first. So this one's basically saying, no, it's not bad. This one says, in contrast, when comparing squats with knee flexion angles of 70 degrees, 90 degrees, and even past parallel, 110 degrees, in trained women, that's important, they found no differences in those joint reaction forces or reactive forces, okay? The stress, I should say, reaction forces, yes. So contradictory, trained versus untrained. I think that's really important. And as I'm going to talk about at the very end, the way these studies are designed, the prior strength, the type of squats, the amount of weight lifted, it all comes into play. It will make sense shortly, I promise. Okay? And this study was in Clinical Biomechanics 2001, and it was titled Patellofemoral Joint Kinetics During Squatting in Collegiate Women athletes, all right? So they were trying to characterize the biomechanics of the patellofemoral joint during squatting. And this one counters the other one, says it's okay. But again, trained versus untrained, both small studies, but especially this one, much smaller. And let's give you two more, okay? Here's one that says, no, you shouldn't go past parallel. Knee joint kinetics in relation to commonly prescribed squat loads and depths. And this is one of my, you know, favorite journals. I'm biased, but when it comes to strength training, the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, July 2013. And they were looking at how load and depth, two things we just talked about, affect the forces about the knee. And that's totally what we're talking about here. How far down you go and how much you're squatting, how does that affect your knees? And I also want to throw in there your lower back. I watched at the gym again this morning. Holy cow, a guy doing deadlifts with a significant amount of weight and horrific form. And I'll leave it at that. But it goes to squats because not only I would say squats, yes, we're worried about the knees, but we also have to be worried about lower back, okay? You need to maintain, jumping ahead of myself a little bit here, but your natural lordotic curve. You need to keep the curve in your lower back to a large extent, especially under large loads. You can argue with me on that, and I'll bring it all together and tell you why I disagree, okay? And so this study, again, controversy about the safety and performance benefits of performing the squat exercises to depths beyond 90 degrees of knee flexion. And so this one found that the lowest values of the forces on the knees were body weight squats with the hands behind your head and barbell squats using 35% of your body weight, okay? And the important findings suggest that as beginners or individuals make initial progressions in load and depth, caution should be expressed as those forces occur at greater rates during these times. Common sense, people. Common sense. Beginners or individuals, especially in like a rehabilitation setting, caution should be expressed. And as I started the show by saying, that caution is rarely expressed, okay? And I just got to read a couple more lines from this study because it really goes to what we're talking about here. These results suggest that a squat progression should start with unloaded above parallel squats and progress to deeper squats before the addition of load. We're getting ahead. This is how I'm going to bring the whole show together when I give you the takeaway. Squat progression should again proceed from above parallel squats to deeper squats once a load has been added. Okay, progression, progression, progression. How many times do we see people in gyms and certain workout, I don't have to name the specifics, but they just go to heavy weights, complex movements right away. They may start with the bar and they start with maybe unloaded bar, but they really quickly advance. And I watched a video yesterday of a gym like this where everyone was doing these type of lifts. And as the camera panned down the people, I just thought, is no one changing the form of these people? It was frightening, the form that some of the people had under heavy loads and with large ranges of motion. Okay. And here's what interesting, a final takeaway from this study, and I found this really interesting. So that when they did the study and they were doing the three different depths, right? Above parallel, parallel, and below parallel for this study, they had a special computer sensors on the legs. And the people were supposed to stop at those three points. What they found was, it's a very important takeaway. People didn't really know. So it's that body awareness, that kinesthetic awareness. So when they were told to stop at certain depths, they didn't always do it. And that's really important when it comes to squats. See, this is something that's not talked about enough. And it is, yes, a simple observation perhaps, but the outcomes and the things that can go wrong are enormous. So subjects only squatted to a consistent depth for the below parallel squat. Easy, right? Got to go really low. I got to touch, you know, my legs together, essentially, to my calves, back of my legs to my calves. That's important because that has, as they say in this study, important safety implications for the squat exercising. Considering that increased squat depth requires reduced loads, going below an intended depth may lead to a failed repetition and potential increased risk of injury. Let me say that one more time. Going below an intended depth may lead to a failed repetition and a potential increased risk of injury. When loads were increased to 85% of one rep maximum, subjects squatted approximately 5 to 10 degrees less during the above parallel and parallel squats. And this goes back to a memory I've had. I've talked about it on other shows, but back when I was working at one of the gyms in New York City, and these two guys would come in and they would take 15, 20 minutes to wrap their knees and put an insane amount of weight on the bar. And it was this whole production. And then when they had this and they were squatting side by side in the power racks, and when they squatted together, they would, I mean, you talk about grunt, yell, and they would do like an inch and a half of range of motion. And I assume they think they were going much deeper. It goes to the findings for this study. And people would watch and go, really? Like, what are you doing? There's almost no range of motion whatsoever. But as this study shows, maybe they didn't know. I assume they thought they were going a lot farther down. And so finally, based on these findings, very important, the professional designing a progression for a client should take into account the large increase in knee loading from an unloaded squat to a load consisting of 50% run one rep maximum as forces increase at the greatest rate during these loads. So again, a study that says got to be careful that yes, the forces increase. Now I'm going to finish with one final study that says no. And here we are. Sports Medicine 2013 and the title, Analysis of the Load on the Knee Joint and Vertebral Column with Changes in Squatting Depth and Weight Load. They say it has been suggested that deep squats could cause an increased injury risk of the lumbar spine and the knee joints. And they say concerns about the degenerative changes of the tendofemoral complex and the apparent higher risk for chondromalacia, osteoarthritis, and osteochondritis in deep squats are unfounded. The study says no. Doesn't you don't have to worry about chondromalacia. So this is all knee issues, right? Knee issues. But here's what they say. Here's what they say. Provided that technique is learned accurately under expert supervision and with progressive training loads, the deep squat presents an effective training exercise for protection against injuries and strengthening of the lower extremity. I agree 100% with that. And that's why I'm ending the show with this study as well. And I'm going to read it again because there's a lot in there. I was going to say unpack. I hate when like news people say there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot there. And they end by saying, contrary to commonly voiced concern, deep squats do not contribute increased risk of injury to passive tissues. But let me read that first sentence one more time. Provided that, I'm going to call this number one, technique is learned accurately. Vast majority of the, or significant majority of the time, it's not happening. Technique is learned accurately. Number two, under expert supervision. It's like every home instructor now for all these different companies, every single one of them says, we have world-class instructors. Really? What does it take to become a world-class instructor? Where's that certification? World-class instructor. Most of those people have little, if any, actual training and study in exercise science, I promise you. And then finally, progressive training loads. So those are three crucial elements to just squatting in general. I'm not going to pull out the deep squats. Just squatting in general. Technique, expert supervision, progressive training loads. And the expert supervision is not just to teach the technique, but as I just talked about, the studies that show that a lot of people don't even know what their form is as they're doing the exercise itself. Okay? And let me bring this all together, because you go, Tom, you just gave us two studies that say yes, two studies that say no, you shouldn't go past parallel. First of all, I don't. And this is how we're going to bring it all together. But why the crazy contradictory research? Well, this is a tough, all studies are difficult in, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, how studies are done and all that kind of stuff, but squatting is challenging due to the wide range of, there's squatting styles, there's the experience level of the subjects, that's why I brought up trained and untrained, collegiate women and not, the amount of load, how you are using, you know, the weight, and the different methods involved in these studies. So there's a lot going on, okay? How you squat, the fitness level of the people, the bias of the people who are holding the studies, okay? There's a lot of variables involved. But this is how we bring in common sense. This is how we bring in common sense. So for me, over the years, I don't squat super heavy and I don't go past parallel. You know why? Because I found I don't have to. There's no gains that I am missing personally as someone who wants to be injury-free, but also compete at a really high level, especially back in the day in endurance sports. And get my vanity side too. Always going to be honest. So I can look better, I can feel better, and I can perform better and live longer by squatting. I'm going to squat. I'm just not going to go super heavy, and I'm not going to go past parallel. That's me. Because I can strengthen my legs, I can strengthen my glutes, I can work on my imbalances. I had piriformis syndrome. That was one of the few issues I had over the years, and I fixed it through lower body strengthening. Not going past parallel and not doing heavy squats. Now, there's people listening who love heavy squats and love to go past parallel. That is your choice. And there's research, as I just said, that said it's not an issue in these studies. And there's other ones that contradict it. But the ones that say, hey, yes, the forces increase as the angle increases, I'm going to take that into account. And this is how I approach everything in fitness. Cost benefit. Cost benefit. And I'm going to give an example I think I've given in one other show. And yes, this is just one. And yes, who knows the causality? But I'm going to bring it up because it resonated with me for a long time and continues to. Many years ago, I was asked to train the son of a man who was a rower. They were rowers. Collegiate rower, the son, high level, really hardcore workout, not for me. And I was brought in to do other things, but he had right out of Central Casting, Russian trainer of this crew team, and they did really heavy, really deep, and I would say not great form squats. And I said, listen, you know, he asked me about it. I said, I don't do those. I don't agree with those. Here's the studies. And he went off. He said, you're totally wrong. I do them. My son does them. I believe in them. He went to those studies, similar to the ones I just pulled out. I go, I get it. I don't. The risk reward for me isn't there. And fast forward, maybe it was 10 or 15 years, maybe even not that much, 10 years maybe, I saw him. He could barely walk. Now, do I know it's from that? Of course not. There's many things. But I'm not willing to risk that. And most of you, I would say, listening to this show, are not power lifters. And for those of you who are, listen, use proper form and build up your strength. And that's where we bring it all together. As the studies say, progression. If you want to be a power lifter, and listen, Dr. Jen Ellison I had on the show, she's getting back into powerlifting. So that's different. Professional athletes, people are competing. There's the risk reward, and they risk injury. And that's why so many other things are involved, like performance-enhancing drugs, people, okay? But I personally look at it this way, and so should you. What are your goals? What are your goals, okay? If your goals are to, you know, lose some weight, to strengthen your body, to bulletproof your body, to work on imbalances and weaknesses, you can stop at 90 degrees for squats. That's my opinion. Looking at the research, my experience over the years. If you're a power lifter, if you're going for super heavy, if you love that, well, then you just darn well better use great form, hopefully under supervision with someone else watching as well. That can always help. Don't need it. You got mirrors too. And be careful, because when you go super heavy with any exercise, the injury increase potential is enormous. And I don't need that. I don't want that. Okay, even though I do endurance sports, that's slow, steady. You know, it's not high, you know, intensity, quick movements, heavy weights. You just run a risk. So that is your choice. And that's why I give you both sides. That's why I give you both sides. And God bless you if you are lifting heavy weights. I hope that, you know, 50 years from now, you're good. And with proper form and all that kind of stuff, you know, hopefully you are. But I don't need to run that risk myself. That's my personal approach. And that's with everything. And I always talk about the one thing I'm most proud of out of everything is being injury free. That's it. Because once we're not, everything changes. Okay. So you have to be smart. You have to check your ego every now and again. It's a whole nother show. All right. So what is good form? Let's bring this all together. Good form. Your chest is up. Your chest is facing forward. So most people, or many people with poor form, what happens is the first movement they do is they drop, right? So their chest drops. Your hips have to go back. Your hips go back. You keep that lordotic curve, which is just the natural curve, and you sit back as if you're going back into a chair. As I'm doing this, I stand when I do these shows. I'm doing it. So hips go back, all right? You look forward. You keep your heels on the ground and you keep your knees behind your toes. Now, it's a whole nother show. Talk about people in India who squat past parallel, knees go past their toes, they're fine. That's body weight too. Whole nother show. But that's my cueing, okay? And one thing I like to do back when I was teaching the videos, hosting those videos, I would go down into a squat and try going down. And while you're going down into a squat, lift your toes up and down. You can't do that if your heels are up. So that's a way to show that you are nice and balanced. Now, if you're someone who has quote unquote bad knees and you're just starting out, your range of motion is going to be very small, and you're just going to use your body weight. Okay, you can put a chair behind you, a couch. You can hold on to something. I used to have clients hold on to something. Sometimes it was my hands when that was appropriate, or, you know, a chair, something stable. And it's that progression. That's what progression is about. So when I was working with clients with knee issues and you know, pain that needed to strengthen, we started small and it was body weight. And then over time, we would increase the depth to get down to 90 degrees. All right, a great test. Here's a great, this is fun. Put a chair right in front of your knees and try to squat down without sending that chair across the floor. All right, and another one is sit in a chair and try to get up without using your hands. We need to have that strength, and you don't need to squat 200 pounds to get that strength. All right, so small range of motion, body weight. Over time, you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper and go slowly. I'm not a fan of the air squats. I want you to control that movement, the entire range of motion, as many muscle fibers as you can. All right? Then, and this is a long time after if you're just starting, a long time for those just starting out, you're going to build that strength. Then you're going to add weight. And it can be dumbbells, it can be a kettlebell, it can be a barbell. I see a lot of people who hold dumbbells though, and their form immediately goes. So you're holding those dumbbells at your side and your chest collapses. A, because it's awkward, and B, a lot of times, again, you're using weight that's too heavy. So I would rather, and had clients hold, I'd rather you do a plie type squat, hold one dumbbell or hold one kettlebell if you're going to add external weight with something like that. You can also, if you say, I want to use the dumbbells, hold them up by your shoulders and increase the weight that way. You can also wear a weight vest, another way to add some weight. And then as you get stronger, as you build that base of strength, then you can go to a back squat with a barbell across your back. Now, there are so many other squats, front squats and, you know, innumerable. This is squatting 101. But build the base of strength through body weight and increasing range of motion and decreasing the speed at which you do them. It will go a really, really, really long way. I mean, the majority of my exercises to stay healthy, especially the lower body, body weight, push-ups for upper, planks, lunges, squats, one-legged versions of those. I don't add a lot of weight almost ever, because I just slow it down because I want to be strong. I don't need a lot of weight to do that. That's not helping my goal and it's increasing my chance of injury. All right. And try that. Try to do a squat down to 90 degrees and pick up your toes, alternate picking up your toes as you go down, wiggle them up and down. See if you can do that. All right. But that's what you want to talk about and think about when you are figuring out what type of squats you're going to do and how much weight you're going to use. What are your goals? And if your goals are, as I say at the end of every show, to look better, feel better, live longer, don't have to do that with a lot of weight. Doesn't have to be complicated. Got to weigh the risk rewards, okay? And this is a perfect example of there are two sides to it, and one side may have a risk of injury. Why am I going there? It doesn't help my goals, all right? So there you have it. I'm a big fan of squatting. I would be very cautious about going past parallel, and I would be cautious about using a large amount of weight, especially as we get older. And that's not to say you can't. Listen, I got, you know, friends who still squat heavy and at younger ages are squatting heavy. Again, I just want you to be healthy. And as we fatigue, technical failure occurs, and technical failure causes injury. Muscular failure, technical failure. I will talk more about that in a separate show, but that is a really important thing to think about. As soon as your form goes, boom, you're done. And that one extra one under heavy load can be one too many. Perfect way to end it. All right. So the doctor who said, Tom, you shouldn't be telling people to squat, I disagree. Be smart about it. Do it for your specific goals, and you will be fine. Thank you for listening. I am Tom Holland, exercise physiologist, certified sports nutritionist, and just lover of everything fitness. If you could rate the show, please do so. Please, please. I would greatly appreciate that. And if you have already, thank you very much. I do have a new book out if you're interested, The Micro Workout Plan. More information on how to be the best you. And I really just want you to know, I come into all these topics with no bias other than being healthy and giving you the best information out there based on the research, based on my experience, and based on common sense. And I'm living proof of it. My clients are living proof of it. And many people who now have listened to the show long enough and are contacting me and telling me the incredible success they've had from following the advice of this show. And I love that. And if you have questions, comments, success stories, if you're angry with me, reach out. Tom H. Fit is my Twitter and my Instagram, Tom H. Fit. You can learn more about me and contact me through the website, fitnessdisrupted.com. And let me say it one final time. There are three things we control: how much we move, what we put into our mouths every day, and our state of mind, our attitude. And that is awesome. I'm Tom Holland. This is Fitness Disrupted. Believe in yourself. Fitness Disrupted is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.